This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where you never really know what you're going to hear, right? I mean, we have heard some incredible stories, and the sources of those stories really cover the entire spectrum, from a political standpoint, from a personality standpoint. Some of them end up very reluctant to discuss the things they went through all those years ago in World War II, and in those cases, we really have to be patient as we mine through levels of those memories. Others tend to be a little more forthcoming, and our guest today, Albert Mazzetti, tends to be one of those guys who is as candid as can be. He's never going to leave you wondering where he stands on an issue. Born in Muskegon, Michigan, to parents who had immigrated from Italy, Albert was one of three brothers to serve in our armed forces during World War II. We're going to dive into his Marine Corps experience in a moment. And really, it's kind of out of the ordinary for Albert to look back in time because he's so busy looking forward. A longtime school teacher and administrator who will tell you he has a doctorate in behavioral science, he has also been in law enforcement. He's held elected office. He once served on the city council in Manteca, California, where he's lived for quite a few decades now. And yes, he'll be the first to tell you that he's disappointed he did not win California's recent primary election for governor, but he's proud that he did garner more than 11,000 votes. Even at age 92, he's thinking about running for office in the future, and if you don't take him seriously on account of his age, he'll invite you to run 3 miles with him every morning, or try another daily routine that you can see for yourself at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We've heard from quite a few Marines here over the years. We've heard about some of their most brutal battles in the Pacific during World War II. More than 24,000 U.S. Marines were killed in less than 4 years. 68,000 more were wounded in action. And of course, there were emotional and psychological wounds as well. We'll get to that. But let's start at the beginning of that Semper Fi story, back to that teenager in Michigan. What was it, Albert, that made you want to join the Marine Corps?
First of all, the Marine Corps was, you know, the elite, the greatest, you know what I mean? And five of us went down. Some of my friends, big, handsome guys like you, but they used to smoke and drink and all that, and I never did any of that kind of stuff. When we went to dances, I used to dance, and they'd sit around, play cards and smoke and all that. You know what I mean? Not me. They flunked out. I was the only one the Marine Corps took. It was me, little Albert.
And were your brothers already in the service at this time?
Yeah. My brother Leon was already in, and my brother Robert was in.
How do you think your mother felt having three boys going off to war?
That's a good question, you know. But she had it in her. She was strong. We had the star in the window. They gave us a star to put on the window.
So she had three blue stars flying there, but I'm sure there were some times where she came close to having to switch one to a gold star. Probably just in your story alone, I'm sure you had some close calls.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What do you remember about the way they made you a Marine, the way they turned this kid into a Marine?
Well, first of all, when I shot my first Japanese soldier, he tried to kill me, and then he missed, and I killed him. I almost couldn't take that. And my men said to me, "Sarge, he tried to kill you." Then I realized, you know, that, yeah, this is war. From then on, it was 17 years old, kill, 18 years old, kill, 19, 20, kill, kill, kill. And it was war. And that's the way it was.
And you were with the 4th Marine Division.
Well, I was with the 4th. It depends on where they... See, we were secure troops. We were machine gunners. Wherever we were needed. I never saw Betty Hutton, nor any of the movie stars. Why? Because I was fighting somebody. And that's the way it was. We were always in demand, you know? And 4th Marine Division, 22nd Marines, 24th Marines, 26th Marines, 5th Temporary with Colonel Chesty Puller. And it depended on where we were needed, you know what I mean? But for some of the Marines, you know, some of them, it was hard because they're like some of the battles that were fought, you know, that more severe than any of the other ones, you know. But it was a job we had to do, and we did it. And we never complained about it. Yeah, but how come you're calling us here? We just came on, you know? No, never heard us say that. Never heard us say that.
And so your job was with a machine gun squad?
Machine gun. The 30 caliber ones.
So how would that work operationally? Walk us through maybe a battle that you were in and how that unfolded, what you were faced with and what you had to do.
It depends. It's now you're asking me, what's war like, Albert? When people ask me what it's like in war, you can't. You got to be in war, and then you don't, you know. But to tell somebody, you can tell them, well, I can tell you, okay, when we were on Guam, my men, I had 13 men behind me, and we were going up a trail, and it was through the jungle, and I hear this little boy yelling, hey, Marines, hey, Marines! And I went over there, and I looked over there, and I told my men to wait, and I looked over there, and there was a cave there. And this little boy was standing out in front of the cave. Remember now, Guam was owned by the United States. It was the only island that I fought on that was really, it was Americans' possession that the Japs had taken over. He yelled at, you know, a little boy, 10 years old, you know? Oh, God, you're opening my brain up. I haven't said these things in a million years. So anyway, I said, what's the matter? And he was talking English to me. Mm-hmm. He said, my mother and father, and remember, America owned that island.
Yeah.
So he said, there's four Japanese soldiers in there that want to give up. And there's a Japanese nurse, and she's there, and we're all hungry, and we haven't eaten, you know, and they're afraid to come out. I said, okay, do you speak Japanese? The only thing I know is, you know, when you come out, your hands out, do not be afraid. And he said, yes, when he would know, you know, because being raised by the Japanese, you know, there. And so he said, yeah. I said, well, this is what you do. You go back in the cave, you tell them to get naked, leave their guns on the ground, and then when they come out, you come out, your mom and, oh, did I tell you his mom and dad were in there? Oh, his mother and father were in there too. And you tell your mom and dad to come out, you tell the nurse to come out, and then the last ones that come out will be the four Japanese soldiers because we'll be ready for them, see? And they've got to be naked with their hands up in the air. He said, okay. So he went in and blah, 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 blah. You know, he did his magic, you know. And well, you know, pretty soon he comes out, his parents come out, Hatsuko. Her name was, I haven't said that in a million years. Beautiful. Little Japanese nurse. Then the guys were standing there. I said, okay, tell them to come out. I said to my men, all right, dump all your food, your sea rations on the ground here. They're hungry, and they're going to take all of our sea rations. So my men dumped all their food out, and I told my radio man, I called the beach. I said, send a shore patrol up here because we got four prisoners for them. And they said, okay, Sergeant. So here come these Japanese, and they were naked. And so I told him, tell them to turn around. He blah, blah, blah. And he turns them around. Nothing. They were okay. I said, okay, fine. Tell them to get dressed. They got dressed. And I said, okay, tell them to sit down here. And I said, okay, you men, give them all the food. And they did. They gave them all the food. And then the shore patrol came up and took them. And Hatsuko, I used to go see Hatsuko. When she was in the woman's part of the camp, you know, prison camp where they were. And I would bring her food. And then one day she wasn't there. And that was it. But I'll never forget her. Beautiful Japanese girl.
I've got to ask you, yes. As you described that scenario, and you took precautions making them strip their uniforms off in case they had something on them.
Oh, yeah.
But were you concerned about a booby trap, an ambush, anything
always,
like that?
Always, always, always. But I was equally concerned. Some of the Marines used to, if they wounded a Japanese soldier, they would prop them up against a coconut tree and torture them or knock their teeth out. Their rifle butts, you know, to get the gold teeth and that. I never allow my men to do stuff like that. Killing them, that's fine. But all this other torture and all that stuff, no.
Have you ever wondered what happened to that young boy who helped negotiate that handoff?
Yes, he was a little Guamanian boy, Spanish, because Spain for 500 years owned all that land. But yeah. Oh, I know what I forgot to tell you. The father went out and he came back and he had an octopus with him about this big. And we had octopus right, sitting right there. We made a fire. He made a fire, his wife, you know, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's, I ate octopus. All of my men and I ate octopus.
So you had given them all your sea rations. So in you know, a gesture of gratitude, he went out and caught an octopus?
That's true. Yes. He said, you have ever had octopus? I didn't know what octopus, you know, octopus, what's that?
But he knew where to find it, obviously.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It didn't take him long, boy. I mean, you know, he was built. He's just Guamanian.
Well, I've heard a lot of stories from World War II. I've never heard one about the celebratory octopus.
How about that?
And I know you were involved in a lot of battles and some other battles where a lot of Americans, a lot of Marines were killed. What do you remember about Saipan?
Saipan was, we took over for reserve. You know, we were reserve. Well, Tinian was just off to the right of it. So it was Saipan, Tinian, Guam. So I fought on all three of those islands. But what I remember of Saipan is the Japanese, they were pushed up against where the cliffs were, you know, high, and the mothers would just throw their babies over onto the rocks because they were told that we Marines would eat them, that we would just kill them and eat them. They really believed that we were that way, that we were that crass, you know, that, and we had people, intelligence, you know, people from the beach, they put up big speakers and they spoke in Japanese, you know, to them, you know, give up, you know, don't believe all this nonsense, you know, and so forth. But it didn't do any good. They kept jumping over the side of the cliff, and, you know, it was sad. Their kids, even, the mothers would throw their children down there.
And I've talked to a lot of guys who were on Saipan and saw that and witnessed that.
Yeah, that's right.
And, I don't know how I would handle that. And I also wonder how that made you feel about the enemy. If the enemy would tell that kind of propaganda to cost innocent lives the way it was happening there.
I know, but, you know, we saw movies where the Japs would go to, they took over China. Remember the one he shot, the Chinese boy? He went up to his head, you know, the Japanese. And so we knew the Japanese were cruel. And they were. They were very cruel. But we weren't. We did our job. And the job was to kill them. And that was what we had to do.
And you guys are killing some of them, but they're killing some Marines. A lot of Marines. Thousands of Marines. I'm sure.
Was it the army? Didn't they were in the Philippines, and they had a march.
Yeah, the Bataan Death March.
Thank you. Yeah, see.
Well, I'm curious, though, for you, because you were in a lot of these battles.
19 jungle islands, yeah.
So I'm just guessing that there had to have been circumstances where you saw guys who you'd gotten to know, who you trusted, who you counted on, who got killed.
I had them in my arms. They would yell at me, "Sarge, I've been hit. I would go over to them. I'd look at them. They'd say, first thing they'd say is, "Am I going to die, Sarge?" And I'd look at him and say, "Nah, you're going to be in a week, you'll be back on the line." Or I would tell him, "Yes, you're going to die. But I'm going to tell you something," I would say to him. "I'm going to write your mother a letter, and I'm going to tell her what a hero you were." And I did. Every one of my men. And then we'd have to go on. Then when they would get so many Marines that they had to put them overboard, you know, they would have the sergeants who, wherever the unit was, they'd take us aboard of a ship, and they would do the funeral routine, and they would tip them over, you know, and down they'd go.
And you mentioned writing those letters to their families.
Yep.
And I don't know if you have an exact count, but it just makes me wonder, how many times do you think you had to do that?
Many, many, yeah. Too many.
And how old were you?
Well, 18, 19. I don't even remember what island it was on. The officer was giving me instructions, and he was a big, tall guy like you. And I was looking off to my left while he was talking to me and giving me instructions. And there were two dead Marines in the water. And the water was going like this, you know, up and back. And their floating bodies were going up and back. I'll never forget that. That's why I cried, I guess.
Yeah. You know? Well, we're going to talk about those tears. And I've got to wonder, if you were in action that many times for that amount of time.
Always. None of us, my units, saw any Hollywood stars come. You know how they show on the movies?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you see Betty Hutton and Bob Hope and all. No, no.
But
nothing like that.
I wonder, were there times where you're sitting there, exhausted, worn out, probably hungry, dirty as all get out, maybe bloody too, and you're thinking, am I going to wake up tomorrow? Am I going to survive this?
No.
Did you ever wonder about
Never.
That?
Never. I was always alive, always alert. My senses were always, you know, 10-10. Mm-hmm. You know, oh no, I used to sleep with my revolver. I have my 45 in the, I sleep with my head, you know, in the foxhole, in my hand. Mm-hmm. Oh no, 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 no. Nobody was going to catch me asleep.
What about, as you look back now, and it's been, you know, 75 years, are there some moments, some instances within all those battles where you look back and say, boy, that was close. That could have been it for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, it's, but if I may, let me reference, because it really bothers me, this school policeman who didn't react, you know, when the crazy guy was shooting, what was that, Parkland School or something like that? But anyway, I wrote a letter about the kids, the way they reacted and all that. And I told him, I said, you should be embarrassed. I said, you know, first of all, you never hear a Marine say that there's somebody else that's a coward. Never call anybody a coward. There have been times, and I told him, there were times when my hands were like this, and I could see the enemy coming, and I couldn't do anything because I was, I don't know, I must have been so afraid. And then my mind kicked in, and then I grabbed, and then I opened up on it. But so was I a hero or was I a coward? You know what I mean? So no, you don't do that. Marines don't talk like that. It's only civilians that talk like that. You know, he didn't go in there and, well, how about he was protecting you for 30 years. I wrote a letter to those kids. I wanted to go on CNN and talk to the kids and tell the kids how wrong they were. Because I would never, as a sergeant, would I say to my men, you're a coward. You just don't talk like that.
It's break time again, but I think you're getting the idea that 92-year-old Albert Mazzetti is very tuned in to current events. I'm sure we'll hear more of that, and we'll also try to explore more of his perspective from being a Marine machine gunner in World War II. You can find photos of Albert as a teenage Marine, as well as a fit and trim 92-year-old if you pull up Hometown Heroes on Facebook or go to hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this.